turn up your radio. It's time for DeLorean Talk with your host, Dave Tavers.
Hey everyone, a quick note before this episode starts. Zach told me that his phone had some problems before we started recording, and we had a few problems, but the audio turns out pretty well by the end. Also, this episode should be marked explicit. Zach uses much more colorful language than I do, so you probably shouldn't have kids listening to this episode. Enjoy! Hi everybody, welcome back to another episode of DeLorean Talk. Happy that you are listening and still enjoy the show. As you can see by clicking on the link or the podcast title, I'm super excited today to have John DeLorean's son, Zach DeLorean, on the show with us. And Zach, thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, anytime, man. You know, I'm happy to be here and answer some questions for you.
Cool. So to get started, basically, I got to meet Zach. Do you prefer Zach or Zachary?
Zach is fine.
Cool.
Yeah, if you call me Zachary, I'll be looking for my mother over my shoulder. So everybody just calls me Zach.
Cool. DCS just happened this last weekend for us. This is August 2021, and you came to the event, and that's when I got to meet you. And several people said, "Oh, you got to get Zach on the show." I said, "If he's willing and interested," and thankfully you were. So a lot of DeLorean owners over the years, we know of you and your sister and your mom. Over the years, your dad came to at least one DeLorean event. I know he's met a lot of DeLorean owners before he passed. Your sister has come to stuff. People have met her and know your sister. I don't know that your mom has ever done anything, but you were the one that everybody's like, oh, you know, we know that he has a son, but you just disappeared. Eventually, in this call, we'll talk about that, but for people that didn't even know that DCS happened this year, that's what happened. Zach was invited and came and had a fantastic time. So we'll talk about DCS in a little bit. You have been gone. I will say we're gone from our community, the DeLorean community, for 35 plus years. So people don't know anything about you. And we would love to hear your story and whatever you're willing to share. I think a good place to start is kind of your beginning with the DeLorean family. During the Q&A at DCS, you said you were adopted. I honestly didn't know that.
That's correct.
As I've talked to other DeLoreaners, they're like, oh yeah, I read that somewhere. So one question would be, how old were you when you joined the DeLorean family?
So I was born on October 24th, 1971, up in Detroit, Michigan. Detroit law, or at least at the time, it may have changed since then, I don't really know. But when a mother puts a child up for adoption, the child stays with the mother for, I think it was like 7 days or something like that. So basically, once that period was up, I went home to my dad. He was obviously John DeLorean. I didn't know who he was at the time, obviously. So
so you were literally, I mean, you were adopted as a baby. It wasn't old. You weren't older.
Oh, basically, I came out of the oven and went home with my dad.
Got it. Okay. Because that was, for some reason, a couple of us were trying to think. We thought that maybe you went, you know, when you were 10 or something. But no, you were adopted as a baby. Cool.
Yeah, so my dad's the only man I've ever known as my father.
Cool.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't like I was put up for adoption and put in the foster care system or anything like that.
Cool. So that was also something, well, I was already surprised that you were adopted, but Christina Ferrari, which you said you consider her your mother, but that wasn't your mother when John took you home.
No, I believe he was married to Kelly Harmon at the time.
Got it.
So everything I'm kind of recapping for you right now is obviously I don't remember any of it. So it's everything that, you know, my mom, Christina, and John have told me throughout the years. You know what I mean? So, and I really, like, when it comes to me being adopted and marriage and this, that, and the other thing, they have no reason to lie to me about anything, so I'm just telling you guys what was told to me.
Sure. So did you know Kelly? How long did that last before you before Christina was your mom?
I don't remember Kelly.
Okay.
To be honest with you, there's only like bits and pieces of things I remember living in Detroit at the time and being real young and, you know, kindergarten and that, or nursery school and that kind of stuff. So I think Kelly and my father got divorced in like I think it was like 72 or 73. And then he married Christina, my mom, I think in the spring of 74.
Got it. And so by that time you're 2-3 years old. Most people don't remember when they're 2 or 3 years old. So makes sense.
Yeah. I don't really remember a whole lot at all. I remember my dad would come home from work and it's weird. Cause I remember sitting on his lap. He'd have the news on and at the time we were in the Vietnam War. And cause I think the Vietnam War ended in 75 or something like that. And, for some reason, I remember just like pictures of soldiers on the because back then, the way the military handles like reporters nowadays,
yeah,
as opposed to Vietnam, they were like reporters were actually in the middle of the shit. You know
right.
what I mean? Like bullets flying, that kind of stuff.
Embedded.
Yeah. Nowadays, you got like Brian Gumbel sitting on a balcony at his hotel watching the, you know, bombs being dropped over Baghdad
right.
or whatever the hell or wherever we were. In the first Gulf War, but, and then my dad had a dog, it was a big old husky. And I remember being outside and there was some kind of like water fountain or something. But anyway, I remember the dog kind of knocking me into the water and, you know, and then me running inside. But outside of like that, I don't really remember, like, I have no real recollection of really many things at that particular time.
So. Got it. Well, still, good memory sitting in your dad's lap and getting bumped by the dog into the water fountain. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of bizarre. So
that was in Detroit. Do you remember when you guys moved to?
Yeah, that was in Detroit, and then, you know, I don't know exactly what year. I should know this history about my dad, but I don't. But I think by the time he married my mom, I think it was 74. He may have already left GM, that I'm sure.
My thinking is that they started working on the DeLorean car in like 76 or 78. And I thought that the transition was pretty quick between GM and his car company. But I'm not an expert. I don't know.
Yeah, that I don't know. Because the way in the documentary has it, when they do the little reenactments,
yeah,
there's a scene. And I believe where he's sitting with Bill and then my mom comes in with the lemonade and stuff. And I think that was in Detroit.
Okay.
So my guess would be that he was starting to put all that together back in the, you know, like maybe somewhere between like 75 and 77. Okay. And then I think that we moved, so my mom was working as a model, I believe she's working for Ford Modeling Agency at the time. Yet again, this is history I should know and I don't, but,
it's okay
for my mom. You know, I mean, she's becoming a top model around the country, around the globe, probably at that time. And so her career, a lot of the shootings and apes and, you know, big companies and things like that, you know, they're based out of pretty much East Coast, West Coast, which would be
New York and LA,
probably LA area. Yeah. So I think we moved to New York probably within a year or two, maybe after they got married. Cause I don't remember going to kindergarten in Detroit, but I remember going to kindergarten in New York City. So whatever, what is that? Like four, maybe.
Yeah.
Catherine was born in,
in 77, okay.
I'm guessing probably moved there sometime between like 74, 75, maybe.
To New York, all right.
Yeah.
At this point, you're old enough to, you start remembering that. You remember moving to New York from Detroit?
I remember the school, kindergarten. I remember my mom, I believe when my mom was pregnant, she went into labor, so I remember like obviously going into the hospital. I remember like bits and pieces of, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade from then on. A lot of things got more clear right around fifth grade, I think, for me, because that's about the time my dad got arrested. So,
you're 10, 11 at that point.
Probably. Yeah. So he was arrested, what, in 82. So right before my was born in 71. Yeah. That I was 10 years old by the time he got arrested. I was just about to turn 11.
Well, let's go back for a sec, because a lot of people over the years have seen the film of you in Dunmurry at the DeLorean factory with your dad. I personally think it's super endearing. He was so concerned about you being cold. He kept asking, are you warm enough? Are you warm enough? You guys had those matching DeLorean jackets. And at one point your dad says, and you keep saying, no, I'm fine. And he says, I don't know how you're not cold. I'm freezing. And I just think it's funny. What do you remember of that trip?
So I'm going to kind of jump a little ahead.
Sure.
To the,
yeah.
Cause it kind of pertains to what you're asking me.
Yeah.
So the DCS week, 4 or 5 days, whatever it was, they had a lot of people talking, and that trip actually came up with Don. I forget his name, his last name. He was a reporter for Car and Driver, is what he said.
Yeah.
So, my whole, I didn't really realize that all those reporters, and I may have met them all before we got on the plane, but.
You're 10 years old.
You know, I don't remember that. Yeah.
Well, who could remember who they met at 10 if it wasn't your family?
Right. Well, and it was funny because an hour before that, I went out to lunch with a bunch of the guys, and they were asking me, do you ever go to the factory? So I'm telling them the story about the factory, and then an hour later, I'm listening to this Car and Driver reporter talking about the trip, and I'm like, and I'm sitting in the seat in the audience, I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't know he was on there with a bunch of reporters. So it's kind of I got a lot of history out of that whole trip, which was pretty bizarre, learning things and meeting people that had met me that I just remember. They met me almost
40 years ago.
40 years
yeah.
ago. And I got no clue. It's just been so different since then. We flew over on the Concorde and we landed in England and we stayed in London, my dad and I, and I'm assuming everybody else as well. I don't really remember all that, but. Part of that trip, him and I spent a lot of time together. We went to National History Museum in London.
Cool.
Super, super old museum. And then, you watch the changing of guards at the palace.
Oh, cool.
Which was pretty interesting. Those dudes with those big, tall, furry hats.
Right,
and shit.
The Q-tips, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just you and your dad. Your mom didn't come. Your sister was still young.
No. Just me and my dad.
Cool.
And kind of, obviously he was there on business and promotion for the car company.
Yeah.
I always viewed it as a father-son trip. So for him, it was a combination of both. For me, it was just more time spending time with my dad and just some one-on-one time.
Prior to that trip, did you guys spend a lot of time together at 10 years old?
Oh, yeah. My dad was, oh, yeah. Absolutely. As a family, as long as, my mom didn't have some sort of shit going on and my dad didn't have to fly anywhere. We had dinner as a family every night. We I'd watch TV with him after I supposedly got all my homework done, which I don't think I really ever did. So I always remember my family, my parents being home all the time, obviously unless there was some sort of career
right
type thing going on. So my parents, my mom grew up in a very traditional kind of Italian household, so she was very family oriented. My dad, he had four brothers, his mom and his father, although his family or the household for my dad was a little, let's just say, dysfunctional at times. So really it was more about, I think he was close with a few of his brothers and his mother, but how do I put it? I guess that, my mom was more family oriented.
Yeah.
Not that my father wasn't. It was just.
It sounds like she probably had a stronger background that kept the family closer than your dad had the experience.
Correct.
Of. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. My dad, and I always had a couple conversations over the years about stuff like this, but his dad was a real bad drunk. He used to drink a lot. So when his mother just couldn't deal with it anymore, she loaded up the kids and they went out to California to stay for however long, then they come back. And so that was like, I guess, a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, you know, having me, my mom and my sister and keeping us so close together and trying to like have this with us every night and things like that. I think that's kind of what drove that and what became important for my father. But my mom was always the one planning the family vacation or going out to dinner. She was like kind of the glue that kept the four of us together. You know what I mean? So
moms generally are those ones. It's not that dads are bad, just that's the motherly instinct. So that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what's, you know, whether we like to talk about it or not. I mean, nowadays men are the pariah, you know,
right.
And it's like, no, we're two totally, I don't have that nurturing quality. I can't give birth. I don't
right.
know what, you know, I'm sorry, man, but it's
no,
like,
no, that's the gender thing. That's why women are more loving and nurturing and men are the, you know, the hunter gatherers and take care of the family thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We don't like to talk about any of that shit. Sorry, dude. That's a whole nother topic of conversation.
Exactly.
But.
So going back for just a second, because of your dad's upbringing, your dad did not drink at all.
Yeah, drank. I mean, he just, you know, he would, you know, he'd be sitting in the living room, you know, and he'd have two or three, maybe four glasses of wine a night, you know, and then go off to bed and watching TV or writing in a journal or something. But I understanding was like his father used to like to go out on payday and a few bucks, get drunk with the guys, and then they, you know, at a bar and they'd all end up getting into and all other, you know, crazy shit. Now that was the condition.
He drank wine, but he wasn't a hard drinker.
No, he wasn't, you know, I never saw him with a scotch or a bourbon. You know, I always saw him drinking wine, white or red.
Cool. So going back, because I cut you off, riding the Concorde, did you even understand how rare that was at 10 years old, or was that just your normal life? Because your dad had already been an executive for a long time.
So I can answer that two ways. So at the time, I didn't really know what plane that was. But as I've now that I'm older, it's like, oh, damn, dude, I flew on the Concorde.
Yeah. So you get to London and you're hanging out with your dad and you said you were like having lunch with some of the guys so that he had a crew with them of people. And I imagine that they were watching over you. Your dad would go to a meeting and you were hanging out with whoever was watching you at the time.
Yeah. So in London, you know, nobody really looked after me. My dad and I would do our stuff and maybe he had like luncheons. I don't remember all the day to day stuff out of it. I just remember little bits and pieces of it. But, when we flew over to Ireland to go to the company, I guess he would like run in, have to have a business meeting, I guess. So I forget the guy's name. I think his name was Peter. I can't remember. But anyway, he took me around, took me for a ride in one of the cars, showed me the whole plant.
Was it full production or had they just started on the cars? Do you remember that?
The gentleman I was with gave me a tour of the whole factory and there was workers and all kinds of shit going on in there.
Cool.
I'm assuming at that point, you know, they were already starting to manufacture the cars.
Cool. Do you remember how long that visit was at the factory?
Oh, we were there for no more than a day. So we flew there and then flew back the same day.
And did you spend most of the time at the factory that day?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the reporters, like Don, who was down there at the DTS, like I'm pretty sure we flew, it was only a day trip to Ireland, you know, over to the factory, but don't quote me on that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We could have stayed in a hotel there that night, and I just don't remember it.
Right, right. So, again, from our perspective, you've been gone for 35-plus years. There's another event called Eurofest, which is like DCS, but it's over there in Europe. I don't think you've delved into all of the DeLorean community stuff until last week.
Yeah, cool. The only reason, so what you were saying about Eurofest, a lot of me getting involved in some of this stuff over the last 15 years, because it's right around when my dad died in 05, is Tamir approached me. He was doing a documentary. And when he came to interview me, he gave me a DVD he made. I think it's Eurofest 2000 or 2001, somewhere in there. And I have the DVD. It's buried in a closet somewhere. I had no fucking clue about, I knew there was a following for my dad's car, but I didn't think it was like what it was when I went to DCS. And nice. Apparently that's like a small thing. Not a small thing in history. What I meant to say was like,
there wasn't a lot of people there this year.
Correct.
Just because of all the stuff going on. Yeah.
And I was like, what? Kind of blew me away, man, to be honest with you.
Trust me, I'm excited to talk about that because it sounds like you just had a great time. So you're 10 years old. You get to go to the factory. You get to spend time with your dad over in Europe. Growing up, it sounds like you had a great life and he was a good dad. Let's jump over to, unless you have something to share, let's jump fast forward to the arrest. And we've seen the documentary and the reenactment. I think somebody asked you at DCS about how accurate it was, and you said pretty accurate. That was, you know, Tamir interviewed you and got your story and tried to reenact that. For everybody listening now, up until when that phone call came in, when you found out that your dad got arrested, I'm guessing it was just a normal life. Like there was nothing crazy or weird going on. Your dad was busy a lot building a new car. Any memories around that? Did he talk about starting the company at home at dinner, or did he not talk about business at home?
So like my dad would bring home the Car and Driver magazine with the car on the front, you know, on the test track with the Ferrari, everything that Don showed us at the convention. And then like he'd bring home another magazine from like track with a picture of the car on it. I had like a bunch of DMC ties that actually were, you know, in the museum. Not the ones in the museum at the DCS were not mine personally, but I had ties that looked exactly like that.
Nice.
He'd bring me like some DMC stuff or, you know, things like that. And I don't have any of it anymore. I mean, I have a few things and a bunch of the stuff I'm selling, but because the stuff that I'm selling, and I just want to make this clear, like, it's not that I'm not proud. It's just, it really should go into somebody's collection who is going to preserve it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I got a coat that I'm selling, and I was telling my buddy who was selling it for me, I was like, look, man, this really should go into a collection, because if I ever end up selling a piece of property and I need five, I throw that thing on, I'm going to get bar and chain and sawdust all over it. You know, I'm going to trash the hell out of it. So,
yeah.
So we didn't really like Philly talk or anything like that. Just, you know, how was school? How was work? How was this? How's your friends? And that's kind of how my love. Now, so like I'd be at school and somebody, because of the golden doors, there you get questions like, can your dad's car fly?
Oh, that's funny.
You know, and you're like, I mean, even at third, fourth, fifth grade, I knew the answer to that question, you know. So for me, all the way until the arrest is, you know, it was just very day-to-day, I think. You know, the way a lot of families lives, and it's just my parents happen to be more in the spotlight.
Yeah. I know you got into rally cars and motorcycles later, but at 10, were you into cars yet?
Not really. By that point, I knew how to ride a motorcycle. So that's kind of what I started getting into. So cars so much, but so what was I wanted to be? I wanted to race motocross professionally.
You said that at DCS that you wanted to, but you were not as crazy as those guys.
Yeah, and I, you know, it takes a pretty serious like type of talent to get on a motocross track with 30 other guys going 60 miles over a bunch of triples. You know what I mean? So I just don't think I was genetically inclined to be a racer. You know, it makes any sense. But crazy and talented, and it's one thing when you're on a trail with your buddy. You know, you're playing that race scenario over in your head, but, you know, come game time, man, it's a different mindset. It's just something I just could never quite develop to become.
Yeah. So now your dad gets arrested. You have no idea what's going on because kids don't understand that stuff. What memories do you have of that? You know, what happened at that point?
So pretty much there when my mom got the phone. They had that in the documentary. I remember something different. My mom remembers something different about that phone call, like the aftermath, the events that there followed, like immediately in the apartment. But we were both there. You know, and I said it in the documentary, you know, like at that point, I thought somebody had fucking died. And my mom was, she came across to me as very upset and probably more upset than I'd ever seen her. So I figured like something had happened to one of our family members out in California. Like what happened, I don't, you know, what I was thinking happened to somebody, I don't know. I don't remember that, but just something real bad.
Yeah.
And then she sat me down, had said that this, you know, maybe an hour or two later, I can't remember, that my father had been arrested, that dad had been arrested. And I can't remember if she specifically said what for. And at the time, there's a guy that my dad would have lunch with in New York, became friends with Herb Siegel, who was president of Chris Craft Industries, which was the company that built the Chris Craft boats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're real, you know, over the years, they had become real famous. And he was married to a woman named Ann, so Herb and Mr. Siegel came over. We were sitting in my dad's study library, and I was across from him, and on my knee, and said, you know, don't worry, we're going to get you out of this. And that was like from the phone call, like 2 or 3 hours later, you know, after the call, that's kind of what I remember going down in the apartment. In the documentary, they have, I think it was a documentary, the actual video footage of mom in the airport and getting on the plane and talking to reporters real quick. And so the documentary kind of filled in for me, video footage I'd never seen before, you know, a lot of that I didn't have, you know. So my outlook on things is because that documentary has really changed my relationship with my mother. It's actually made it for the time. And it's provided me with a part of my history that I didn't know was there. So,
yeah,
that phone call kind of fucking sucked, to be honest with you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I don't imagine any parent is going to fill their kids in too much on the things that happened during that time, you know, with the court. Kids aren't going to understand, and it's, you know, it's your parents. How long before you feel like things, I don't want to say went back to normal, but, you know, when your dad got out of jail, he's obviously stressed out, but how long before your normal family life turned back to, or did it ever go back to family dinners and that kind of thing?
I can't really give a time frame. Just one, I don't remember. And I think I kind of lost track of the day-to-day stuff. I know my mom pulled me out of school about 7 days because of reporters and all kinds of other stuff.
Oh yeah.
And then I was probably distraught about a bunch of stuff. Like I was out of school maybe 5 days, like that. And, you know, I don't ever really go back to being, you know, I mean, like, you know, we still did family dinners. We'd go out to, prior to my dad getting arrested, he had bought a piece of property in New Jersey, and we'd spend weekends and holidays out there. I think we spent like that Thanksgiving, Christmas out, and New Year's out there in New Jersey.
That's the Bedminster house, right?
Correct. Chuck now owns, it's a golf course.
Right, right. Something you had mentioned during DCS was you had great memories of in New Jersey on that property, on that giant farm. That's when you started riding motorcycles a lot, right?
Yeah, a lot more. So like up until my dad bought the property, I really only got to ride a couple times a year because he had a ranch out in Palma Valley, California. And that's where I had a little Honda 50, and that's where that thing was. And then until he bought the property in New Jersey, we would always like be in New York City. So then I think he bought the property for a couple reasons. So that his main reason was he wanted to develop it at some point and turn it into a golf course with a bunch of homes on it, going to keep some of the property. And so when he bought the property, I think that was his goal. And then also provided us to like get out of New York City, spend summers out there. And then that's when I really started riding a lot more. like every weekend and then on holiday, that kind of thing.
That's awesome. Like you said, Trump built a golf course there. That's cool that your dad had that vision that much longer ago. He was going to do the same thing.
Yeah, well, my dad was real into golf. He had how many country clubs he belonged to, but apparently it was like, you know, two or three of them all over the place.
Wow.
And then at the farm, went into this closet, there'd be like six sets of golf clubs and golf bags in there. So he was real into playing golf, man. And to this day, I don't understand that obsession. Where I work, guys come in, they playing golf all day. My boss plays on the week. I'm like, I don't get it, man. I just like, how the hell do you throw everything in the pond, man? I just don't have the patience for that shit.
Yeah.
So that was always his goals. So it was, you know, he didn't buy it for us to have like a Christmas tree and Christmas at, and he sure as hell didn't buy it. So I had a place, you know, he wasn't buying it. Oh, my son needs a place to ride a bike, so I'm just going to buy this property. I think he ultimately had like really wanted to develop it. So
yeah.
Right before the bankruptcy court and hearing, and then we lost the property. Like I was, it's a long story, but like I ended up having to sit in a couple meetings with these golf course developers trying to come in and buy the property and stuff. It was late 90s.
Wow.
The whole time that he owned it, I think 20 years or whatever, like I think in the back of his mind, that was always his goal, was to develop that so that he had a place to live, had some money in the bank. And then of course he was trying to still, even all through the 90s, he was trying to start another car. So,
right. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, your dad was a smart guy, and he was a business guy, so it makes sense that he would have wanted to buy some land and develop it and have something in the long term.
Yeah.
Something you had mentioned recently about that you and your sister had to go deal with the bankruptcy court and that kind of thing for some of the assets your dad had set aside for you, but let's take a step back for a second. Your relationship with your sister, like I said, most DeLorean owners that are active in the community are aware that your sister exists. She's been to stuff and she's friendly to the community. How close have you been over the years with your sister? Cause you're only a couple of years apart. And how close are you guys now?
We're 6 years apart in age. So I'll be 50 this October. So she'll turn 43 right after she was born in November. I was born in October. So, my sister and I live with my mother, and then my mom got remarried to Tony Thermopoulos, who's our stepdad. And so me, I was always kind of, after the trial, I guess I was always a quiet kid to begin with, probably pretty introverted. And then with the trial and everything, everybody recognized the name, not just because of the car, but also because of the trial. A lot of DMC community doesn't talk about this stuff, but you know, right after that, man, that's what people focused on. They didn't focus on, like, you know, the car or talking about the car. It was always like, you know, if I said my name somewhere, you know, they'd always, you know, somebody always had a smart ass remark or something fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And I got into quite a few arguments and scrapes and bumps and bruises and, you know, and got in a lot of trouble and things like that. So I was always off kind of doing my stuff. And so, like, my sister, you know, I was coming into my teenage years. My sister was, she hadn't even been turned 10 yet when my dad was arrested, you know, and then like, just like any other brother and sister, you know, when you're the older brother and you don't want your little sister around when your friends are over,
right?
You know, that kind of shit, you know,
normal kid stuff.
Right. So like, I always loved my sister and I always kind of felt, you know, especially as I got older, a little bit more protective of her. We didn't really hang out very much. We didn't really necessarily do a whole lot of stuff together. You know, I would always be out like that. So with my friends, and then, you know, my sister had her little friends and stuff like that. But as we got older, then I moved back to the East Coast to live with my dad in 1980, I think summer of 88. And my sister stayed in California. And then at some point she moved back to live with my dad. I'm not sure how all that came about. By the time she had moved back, she was already going into high school or in high school, and I was living in upstate New York and Washington, D.C., living my life because I would be like, I'm in my early 20s.
So when you were in your early 20s, were you still living with your dad, or had you moved out and started your own things by then?
No, I tried going to community college, then I tried going to art school. Dad and I, we were a little bit on the outs with each other, probably for a couple years. I thought I knew more than he did. And so my dad's like, I think my dad's position was like, all right, dude, have at it. You know, I'll see you in a couple years, come home, you know, yep. And you fall on your face and you know, you kick balls a few times. You're like, okay, maybe he did know more than I do. So,
yep.
So yeah, I was out and, lived up in upstate New York for a couple years, go to community college. That wasn't working. Then I moved down to DC for a couple years, went to art school. That wasn't working. And then I came home and lived on the farm and started trying to figure out what I wanted to do. My sister was still there at the time, and she's now being a teenager, and, you know, her and I moved back in the house, and we'd butt heads and, you know, constantly arguing and some other stuff like that. Doesn't mean I didn't care about her and love her. It's just like, you know, it's just brother, sister, sibling crap. And then she was dating a guy who's the father of my nephew, Kevin. They moved in New York. My sister, she wanted to go into modeling. That didn't really work out. I'm not really too sure why that didn't work out.
Yeah, she's gorgeous, and your mom is obviously gorgeous. So
yeah, I mean, I've got photos of some of the headshots of mother and some of my sister, and they look identical. I mean, it's scary, crazy how much they look alike when they're modeling. And then she had moved into New York, and then she ended up having my nephew, Kevin. I forget how old she was. I think she was in her 20s. And her husband, Matt, at the time, who was Kevin's dad, they moved back to California. Yeah, the history there is a little wonky. It's all over the place.
Did you start getting closer at that point?
Not really.
Just different life choices in different parts of the country?
Yeah, I think I was into my stuff, and she was doing her thing and
sure.
Talk once in a while and things like that. And then when I moved here to Cincinnati in 2003, her and I were kind of talking, and then our dad died. And then I don't know what year, but I started drinking pretty heavily. This is after my dad had died. I was just becoming a real prick. And so we stopped talking for a really, really long time, quite a few years, actually. I don't know how many years, but it was definitely more than two. Hmm. So she was, you know, she had to protect herself and, you know, sure. Emotionally and stuff. And I mean, I was living in Cincinnati. She was down in Texas. And so I get it. You know, I mean, I understand. I lost two good friends in the last about 5 years ago because my drinking was still pretty heavy. I was drinking pretty heavy for almost a whole decade. So, you know, my friends, that they had to distance themselves. So, you know, I get the whole thing. So,
yeah,
you know, now better and talk when we can, you know, life stuff. I'm working, got the dog. She's got her kids and trying to fix up a house that she lives in New Hampshire in. So, you know, we try and keep in touch. And documentary, I think, really helped pull things together for us.
Good. So I'm wondering how much your dad has affected your life as an adult after he's passed away.
All of it. So when you said you guys didn't know what to expect when I got up there, I heard a couple different versions from people who told me the same thing.
Yeah.
And some guy thought I was just going to be some rich, uptight fucking prick. And kind of, I guess I kind of dispelled some of the assumptions that I am, you know, up there. And I'm glad I went. I'm glad I could have changed people's opinions of me by going up there. And, you know, they tell me, yeah, we thought you were going to be an uptight prick wearing a suit. And here you are drinking beers with us till 3:30 in the morning in the hotel room. I'm like, yeah, man, you know, like, nope, there's no money. I've got one coat and one tie, you know, so.
That is one of those questions that a lot of people assume. You come from a well-to-do family, and DeLorean owners, we've read all this stuff. Lawyers took everything, basically, and your dad struggled for many years. You are a hard freaking worker, man. You said you have done tree trimming for years. You did cabinetry, carpentry. You've been a bartender and a server. I've done a couple of those jobs, and they are hard jobs. So there's no question in my mind from meeting you and talking to you, you're a hard worker. Presumably, there was no family money left that you could just sit back on a...
Well, not after he died. And then in 2000, the bankruptcy happened. We lost the farm. And I just want to say one thing. I mean, I have had money in my lifetime. Like, when my sister was born, Herb Siegel gave me and my sister like $10,000 or 10,000 shares or $10,000 in Chris-Craft stock.
Nice.
And so by the time I got my hands on it, my dad gave it to me when I was living in upstate New York. It was probably worth $150,000.
Nice.
So I basically pissed that away. You know, and that's happened a couple times in my lifetime. My dad gave me some, you know, like 50K or whatever it was, or the Chris-Craft stock, and it's fucking gone. And then we lost the farm. That's gone. And then my dad dies, his wife, and that's a whole nother story with the will and everything else like that. And then she turned around, and I think she sued the company down in Texas, and they settled out of court, and she took that money. And it took me a long time to figure this out. And I'm not exactly too sure when and where I figured this out or when it clicked.
Yeah.
But my mom and I, you know, she told me, because her and I would get into arguments in the 90s, and her and I had a real rough, rocky relationship for a very, very long time. And I was complaining about money, and I was in my 20s, and why can't I have this money, and blah, blah, blah. I was becoming a fucking little rich prick. And she told me, she goes, it's not your money. It took me, many, many years to understand that. So then when the farm's gone, I don't have a place. You know, if I moved away, I could always go back home. Well,
right.
I can't. There's nowhere for me to go. Everything nowadays. I mean, my family's helped me out throughout the years. My mom's helped me out with some rent, helped me cover like a month's worth of rent or something like that, especially after last year with COVID and restaurants. I lost my 2020 tax return as opposed to my 2019. I lost $6,000 in wages because the fucking government decides that they're going to shut everything the fuck down. So, you know, I've had help along the way, but at the end of the day, it's my paycheck. It's, you know, this is my life to live it the way that I see fit or things like that. And I've probably pissed away a couple good opportunities in my lifetime. And at the time, you know, I don't know why I would have done something like that, but you got to get up and go to work in the morning, man, you know, and that's just something that I learned. And my dad tried to teach that to me. My mom, a few lessons talking to my mom and things like that. And, you know, nobody's coming to save my ass. So you just got to get up and feed the dog and shower and go to work.
At some point you have to grow up when you realize there's not the family house to go back to.
Correct. You know, and that kind of came for me when I moved to Ohio and I started doing tree work. After about a year doing that, they put me with this guy who became my foreman for a couple years. And he really taught me what hard work was about. His name's Carl Grant. Another guy. I think he's up in Massachusetts. I haven't seen or talked to him for a year or two. I should probably give him a call. But he showed me what physical work was about. You either do the job or get off the job site.
Right.
He has a family to feed. He has a wife and kids, and he's got a small farm to take care of. And, you know, he has his own obligations. And if I'm on the job fucking it up, then you're causing the company to lose money. It takes us too long to do the job. You know, and then you're cutting into time and a half. And the list goes on. Now, it took me about a couple months of working with him to figure all that out. And he was very patient with me. So
it's good.
And then from that point on, it's like I've taken the stance of like, don't fuck with my paycheck. Don't fuck with my money and just go to work. Just get the job done.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to, unless you want to cut me a check for $300,000, you know,
right.
I mean, I'll take a couple years off work. That's fine. But unless that happens, that's on me. So.
Right. So you said it was when you moved to Cincinnati, when that happened, when did you quote unquote grow up? When did you realize that you're in charge of your life?
Probably right around like 31, 32, maybe somewhere in there. Yeah.
During that whole time, one of the questions I had asked you at DCS was about the family name. Over those years, before you started, you know, working on things yourself, how much did the family name follow you? We all can drive the DeLorean and people love it and they have these great memories, but we can leave it in the garage. We don't live with the name. Anytime you're out in public and you say the name Zach DeLorean, I would have guessed that a lot of people would be like, wait a second, like the car? What has been your adult life experience having that name?
So it's like basically nowadays, I think the car's kind of out of sight, out of mind. The drug stuff is kind of out of sight, out of mind. So a lot of people, like, if they're older, they recognize the name. Or like when I go to a store and I'm buying groceries or something, or and they want my email or they want my name, or you know how you got to put all that crap in.
Yeah.
They're like, can we have your name? So I'm like, DeLorean. And they're like, oh, that's a cool last name. But they're like 25 years old. They don't really, it's the gamut. It's the spectrum. You know what I mean? And it's weird because the name, like when I say my last name, it doesn't really draw attention. But like driving around with you guys this past week in the car and everything, man, the car itself is like a fucking magnet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a fucking magnet. So for you guys, on one hand, you're dealing with the physical aspect of it. I mean, how the hell can you drive that car anywhere and not get attention?
Right.
Yeah. I can go places and people probably won't know the last name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think before the DCS thing, I was always somebody asked me my name, I give them my last name, or, you know, and in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, fuck, here it comes, you know. After spending time with you guys up in Chicago area, I don't necessarily have that going on in my head anymore.
Good.
So between the documentary and then a couple years later going up and spending time with you guys has really changed my outlook on a lot of things. You were saying, oh, you know, fuck, he hates the car. And there's some truth to that. I was just trying to, like, in the both documentaries, the one that Netflix bought and then the one I did with Tamir, I was just trying to show my thinking and trying to understand and present my point of view on an issue that is volatile one way or the other in my world or in life. And I was just trying to give an honest portrayal to people to let them know, hey, man, this is my side of the story. And when I see the car, I feel this emotion, and then I feel the opposite emotion. One minute, I'm proud of it, and that's real cool. And the other minute, it represents a really bad time for me in my life.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wish the whole thing would blow up. Because our society today is so, like, you're either on this side or you're on this side, and there's no room for in between.
Yeah.
And I always try to give people in between. You know, here's my dad. Here's a guy who really wanted to see his dream and got into some trouble. And, you know, and how far would you be willing to go to save that?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that may get lost in translation. So that's how I felt for about, you know, 35, 40 years with the car. You know, it represented something really good and it represented something real bad. And for 40 years, I've been wrestling between the two emotions and trying to figure out all this shit on my own, because it's like, yeah, I can't really talk to anybody about it.
Yeah.
What really changed a lot of things was when the documentary came, both documentaries came out, and then what really changed it for me was when I went up to Chicago to the DCS. You know, yeah, man, that was a pretty profound experience, man, me spending time up there with you guys.
Awesome. We only heard about DCS even happening like 2.5 months before it was happening.
Okay.
And then probably a month before the event that we saw that, oh, Zach DeLorean is confirmed. Whoever invited you, your initial thought was what?
So I'm on Facebook, and through Facebook you do message. They have, like, you know, their version of text messaging.
Yeah.
And the documentary came out. I start getting these text messages through Facebook. You know, people looking me up, and then they message me, and then, you know, we become friends. We are send something back or whatever. And, you know, I'm getting these text messages from, like, Chicago, California, Florida, New Zealand, Australia, fucking France, England. I'm like, there's that many people fucking watching this thing? Like, you know? And, you know, and who the fuck am I, you know? I mean, I gave them like 2 days worth of interview, and they used total maybe like 5 minutes in it, which is fine because it was all about the car and my dad and how he got to where he got and all that other stuff. So I'm like, what the hell is going on? This is fucking totally bizarre, because my whole life I have been very, very quiet. You know, I just go out and I do my thing, and it is what it is. So Tamir calls me up. I think that the documentary came out in like the summer of 2019. And then I think he called me up in like September, October. And he goes, listen, man, my buddy Rich wants to do this event in 2020. And they'll get you a hotel room. He'll buy you, you know, your meals and get you up there and big convention, car show. And he goes, you up for it? And I was like, yeah, man, I'll go, which I think kind of surprised Tamir.
It surprises me that you were that ready to do it, because you must have been invited for the previous 20 years to stuff, right?
My sister always tried to get me to go. And I was like, I'm not going to a Star Trek convention. I'm just not fucking doing it. People are out there and they hear that. Like, I'm sorry, but that was always what was in my mind, you know?
Yeah, a bunch of weirdos with this car, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, why the fuck are they following Dad's car, man? They must be fucking crazy, you know? Fuck that. Like, so
when your sister would ask you, why would you say no to her?
Because I just didn't want to deal with the whole scene. Because, A, I didn't know what I was walking into. I didn't want to be around a bunch of – because Back to the Future had such a profound effect in the way people view the car. Plus, people love the Back to the Future trilogy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like the same thing, like, and I equate it to Star Trek, because, like, if you, and I've never been to one, but I've seen them, you know, people are dressed up as Spock and the whole hands and, you know, the Vulcan sure. death grip and all this other shit. And I'm like, why would I take time out of my weekend to go and talk to Doc Brown? It's just not going to happen. And she's like, no, you know, the community's real inviting and this, that, and the other. I'm like, Catherine, I'm not fucking doing it. Because, and part of it too was I always kind of knew that people would potentially want to talk to me and things like, and that's also something that I was never really comfortable with either. I'm not, you know, my dad was always like to be in the spotlight or, you know, but he also had that personality and charisma to deal with those situations. You know, my sister, I think one convention she was throwing out t-shirts, you know, and I'm like, that is not, that is so far not me. It's kind of surprised me a little bit because the, you know, I got this like huge outpouring of people texting me saying they love the movie, they love the car, they love, and I talk about the documentary and, you know, I've always been a car fan and you did a really great job and we feel sorry for you or whatever it is. And so it really got me thinking. So by the time Tamir called me, I'm like, man, maybe you just get your ass up there and check it out. If it's a freak show, you don't ever have to go back. Maybe it's time you put this puppy to bed. I told Tamir, I'm like, yeah, man, that's cool. Then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really hear anything back about it. And then Tamir reached out to me sometime this spring and said, hey, man, you know, my buddy Rich is going to get this thing going. Do you still want to go? And I was like, yeah, because now by that time, I, you know, one night I was sitting at home and I get a text message through Facebook from this dude in Australia. So, you know, what, he's a day ahead of us, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm drinking beers. I'm like three beers into a six pack watching TV. And I ended up texting this guy for 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So by the time to me, I'm like, yeah, man, you know, this isn't high school where people are talking shit about your dad and your mom. People actually give a shit.
Yeah.
I've never been very optimistic about people and human beings and their nature. And these people reaching out to me through, you know, text messaging, I'm like, man, maybe you should really go check this out and go up there and give it a fair shake. Like somebody asks you about drugs, fucking answer them. Don't be a prick. Just go up there, be a man and just do your shit and take care of it. So get in contact with Rich and him and I are talking and stuff. I mean, he set the whole thing up. So I went up there and I spent, what, I guess maybe 4 or 5 days with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I had a fucking blast. I mean, it was a great time. And the community was not what I thought it was going to be. You know, like I said, I know that this was a smaller scaled down version, but man, I had a great fucking time, man. You know, I really did. I had no idea that people really felt that way about my dad and the car and things like that.
Well, on Friday night, you did a Q&A on stage for 2.5 hours, which it was fantastic. You're an open book. You were so willing to share. And like you said, DeLorean owners we're fans of your dad and we've thought about and heard of you for a long time, but you weren't anywhere. You weren't accessible. You didn't talk to anybody. So we didn't know what the story was going to be. And you were so sharing and it was wonderful to have you open up your heart and your life experiences to us.
thanks for saying all that. I you know, it kind of blows me away. But the reason why I never really was successful, or maybe people thought I'd fucking died in my 30s, which I'm actually surprised I'm still alive today, to be honest with you. I think my father would be surprised that I'm still alive today. But wasn't trying to hide or disappear. I just didn't want anything to do with it. And it's not towards the DeLorean community. It's, nope, that's done. That's over. You know, I'm out and doing my thing. And I've always been a pretty private, quiet person. I've tried to keep to myself and just kind of do my thing and live my life and stuff. And I never really have ever really, like, put myself out there.
And now DCS has changed for you, too.
Yeah.
You said you'd come back to another one of our events, and when time permits, hopefully, if people invite you to car shows or get-togethers, that hopefully you'll come out and hang out some more with us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I had a great time. You know, I really did. It was like, the only thing that made it weird was all the cars. Everything, like, talking with you guys, going to lunch, drinking beers, that's shit that everybody does on a daily basis with their friends.
Right.
So that aspect of it wasn't uncomfortable. Like somebody, you know, if we were drinking beers or having lunch, somebody asked me a question, it would be no different than me having lunch with a buddy here and him asking me a question about my life here in Cincinnati. You know what I mean? So like that aspect of it was easy to slip into for me because everybody was so nice. There was, you know, nobody was being a jackass or, you know, and I wasn't fucking hammered doing stupid shit and pissing people off, or the cops weren't there. And, you know, but so like, but then when what was very surreal and when reality started to set in was like the next morning I'd go out with my coffee and smoke and see all the cars. And I'm like, oh yeah, reality check. You know, this is what you're up here for. This is what's going on. And I really want to say this too. And I hope you use this because it has to do with my mom. So, right before I went up there, I think I talked to her on a Saturday, and then I was leaving on Wednesday. And we're talking, and I told her. This was like, I had known I was going up there for months, and I didn't say anything to anybody except for work because I had to get the time off.
Yeah.
And so she's like, what? And I was like, yeah, I'm going up to this, you know, dad, this car show in Chicago, and they're helping me up get up there and taking care of me up there and stuff like that. And she's like, you go up there, you know, you should be, you know, very proud of your father's work. He's a brilliant engineer. He was who he was, you know, and it wasn't always good, but his life's work was good. And that really hit me because there was a little bit of probably bad blood between my father and my mother, you know, by the time they got divorced.
Yeah.
And for her to turn around almost 30, 35 years and say something like that to me, which maybe she has said it, but I don't ever remember it. So for me, it was like kind of a first time thing. And she goes, you know, you go up there, you be an ambassador, you be nice. And then that's when she goes, you put on a nice shirt and a nice pair of pants, you know? And I'm like, fuck, man, I'm going through my closet and it's like all, you know, military green and black and jeans, you know? So I'm like, okay. So I picked out all the best t-shirts I had, the ones that didn't have holes in them. And, you know, and so that helped me get up there and interact with you guys. That first day, I didn't really interact with a lot of people just because I'd been on the road for about 12 hours.
Yeah.
So by, you know, going from Cincinnati up to Rich's barn and getting a big tour of like the D-Rex and the limo and talking with him. I mean, we talked for a while and then took back roads all the way up to Crystal Lake. So, you know, that was another couple hours or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So by the time I got up there, got done with dinner, which was a great experience, my first dinner at the DCS, I was wore out, man. I was like, dude, I need a goddamn beer and go to bed. So
I'm guessing you're not used to kind of being center of attention for a bunch of people.
No. No, not unless I'm standing in front of a judge. So which has happened a few times in my lifetime. But
so you're talking about your mom. That's awesome that you told her and that she had that great experience. Have you talked to her since DCS? Did you tell her how it went?
I talked to her one day when I was up there. I forget what day. We talked for about 5 minutes. And then I put a call into her, I don't know, like this Thursday or something like that. So I'll give her a call today, see if we can catch up. But
nice.
Yeah, so I haven't really talked to her, since I was probably up at DCS.
Well, at some point when we talk again, unless it's too private, because you don't need to share everything, but hopefully she'll be happy to know that you had a good time and have found another community to be part of that we want you to be part of.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy, you know, to be invited and to hear some of the things, you know, you're part of this community now. It's like people see me walking down the street with my dog. Usually it's like, oh, fuck, here comes Zach and Abel. You know, it's like, you know, I'm not really in too many people's communities. You know, and that's mostly because the lifestyle that I've chosen or has created for myself throughout quite a few decades and things like that. So to hear that is, you know, I don't hear that every day, actually never, you know, so it being up there and hearing all this stuff and talking with people and stuff, it was a very profound experience for me.
Good. And I will say, you know, people, not every DeLorean owner is the same. I have sat with DeLorean owners at car shows who scream at visitors because they put their finger on the DeLorean because they're not used to stainless steel. And I'm embarrassed when I've been with those owners because it's like, these are fans. It's not like they're jumping on the hood or climbing in the car and slashing the seats. They're touching the stainless. So relax, right? So there are some owners that are jerks. But for the most part, this community is friendly and everybody loves the same thing and we're all fans of your dad. And I know I'm excited to see you at other stuff and hear about you going to other DeLorean car shows. And there's a lot of DeLorean clubs around the country. So if you ever do travel, go anywhere else, reach out to Tamir or Rich or myself or whoever you do know. We'll hook you up with whoever the local owners are and you get to meet some more people. And I know owners would love to meet you and get to know you and hear your story and just have you hang out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are DMC owners out there that like, if you breathe on the car wrong, like they'll freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
My advice to those people is go get a bottle of Jack, a fucking joint, and go sit in the woods under a tree for a little while and chill the fuck out, man. Just, and not to undermine anything with the DMC community, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, it is just a car. If somebody touches it, it's not going to break.
Right.
It's great that there's that kind of community out there where people are warm and accepting that own these cars, because that's what's going to keep the car alive.
Yes.
That's the important thing, I think, is like the people that own the cars that are keeping the memory of the car alive, and what my dad was trying to do with the car and building the plant and bringing jobs to Northern Ireland and trying to give a guy who makes $20,000, $30,000 a year a sports car that looked good, perform somewhat pretty well, and something that they could afford and drive.
Yep. For sure, owners definitely will want to get to know you more as you feel more comfortable and you want to hang out. There's a lot of good people out there. We're all fans of your dad. We're all fans of the car, and yeah, just looking forward to seeing you at more stuff. Part of the pleasure of getting to know you at DCS was you're just a normal guy. That's you're not stuck on yourself, and you're fun.
You know, I mean, when two governments go after your father, break up your family and shit, I just don't know if there's anything else out there that I really need to be afraid of.
Yeah.
So, and I've been kicked in the balls so many times and had to get back up that, you know, whether it's my doing or XYZ's doing or family or governments or whatever. I mean, you know, and that's what my dad always tried to tell me was, listen, man, when you get knocked the fuck down, you better get up and go back to work or go, you know, you could just get back up and do your shit.
Yeah. Zach, again, I'm so thankful that you're willing to take the time. This is great to catch up with you. I mentioned before, if you're willing to do another call, I think there's going to be a lot of good questions from other owners. And, you know, you and I will keep in touch and we'll do another call and answer some questions that other owners have that I didn't ask or that I didn't touch on.
Yeah, if there's something that you need clarification on or, you know, whatever, I mean, just give me a call and we can set up a time and I'd be more than happy to talk to you again.
Awesome. Thanks again, Zach. Pleasure. And welcome to the family, to our family. And we'll talk again soon.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Zach DeLorean. Be sure to send emails to comments@DeLoreanTalk.com. Please be sure to share any of the DeLorean Talk or DeLorean Directory social media when you see posts out there. And we're looking forward to getting more episodes done. So drive safe and keep that stainless polished.